Hey, everybody, Aaron here. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to another episode. We're really excited to have you on board with us. If you are one of our Portland area listeners, come on out February 28th to the Nerd Out PDX for our first co-hosted horror movie night. We're going to be watching Killer Clowns from Outer Space, recording a future podcast, hanging out with audience, putting them on the podcast, having participation with the film, with prizes, and just an all-around good time. If you've never been to the Nerd Out, you simply have to. It's a Shangri-La for nerds of all types. It's got comic book covered walls, tables, statues and art of all your favorite characters. Everything from sci-fi, anime, comics, horror, all the other corners of geekdom that we all love. Our movie's going to start at 8 p.m. We will be there before and after that, having fun, hanging out, recording. We hope to see you there.
Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
Holsteins? So Holsteins is a milk cow, apparently, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah.
Anyway, they put up this new restaurant, and it's just said Holsteins for months and months and months and months, and we're like, well, it's a milk cow. You're not going to make hamburgers out of a milk cow. You're going to make milkshakes out of a milk cow.
You make hamburgers out of anything that moves. That's how I feel.
Well, if it's like a burger and shake joint, I could see that.
Yeah. So anyway, it just turned out to just be a really overpriced hamburger joint.
Well, yeah, with a name like Holsteins.
Yeah, it was... You know, $18 for a fucking basic cheeseburger.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where's it at?
It's across
the street. But are the cows massaged?
Oh, I can look at a menu. You know, I can remember the days.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm not that much of a Puritan.
I don't think you're a Puritan.
No.
At all.
No.
Not the word that comes up.
Yeah.
Really?
I'd be willing to bet.
He's a Puritan.
I'm shocked.
No.
Yeah, well. Don't be.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Here we go again. Another plague cast.
Oh, fuck. I know. It's ridiculous. When's it going to stop? When's the madness going to stop?
Last one we were actually all fairly healthy.
We were not... None of us were sick, but we're all really tired now. We're
so tired, yeah.
And then the non-meat eater... Now has to bring the plague.
Yeah, because last episode was recorded literally days before Christmas, like two or 3 days before, so. I think. Yeah. So the last one we recorded was early January, so that won't even hit till February sometime.
Yeah.
So yeah, people...
Yeah, because that was New Year's week that we recorded.
People are going to think we're sick all the way through summer instead of during the actual like flu season because everything's pushed back.
I know, we haven't even gotten flu yet going through here. This has all just been the cold.
Yeah, I did the flu. You guys had whatever it was back at your Vegas trip time. Mm-hmm. Then after that, I got sick. And then Lee got sick right after that.
That was just a cold, and then he just got too drunk. That wasn't the flu.
I brought
that
back
was the Irish
flu. Island fever.
The Irish flu.
Yeah. In the
it's
summer.
A thing.
So I might have started it, because I brought the island fever back.
You did.
It's a gnarly year for sickness, though.
Yeah, it's not so fun.
And at your age, you shouldn't be having... Because if you get pneumonia,
I can get pneumonia, and I can go buy away a Bernie Mac and Jim Henson.
No kidding, I know.
Yeah.
At your age, it is not recommended.
Fuck it. At my age, I get the super vitamins. The shit you regular folk can't get.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, let's talk about your Medicaid. Just calcified, and you don't have to worry about
let's
it.
Let's talk about your Medicaid, Lee.
And my diabetes.
Oh, it's boy. Diabetes.
Diabetes.
Check it early. Check it off.
Check it off. Ain't no reason not to.
Well, for Brandon.
All I came here for is to hear the sounds of the beer pouring.
Well, I came here to talk a lot and drink some of that beer.
I considering the movie that we're watching, I found the perfect mug because it takes place. Yeah, I know. Grace is dying to pour, and I'm like, oh, no, it's my time to talk and brag about my mug. But because I'm not trying to match a mug with every movie. It just so happens that I like it the last couple times.
Have a fun mug.
And the movie, you know, takes place primarily in a radio broadcast room in a station. And those radio guys, they pretty much just have their old mug of coffee on their board. And, yeah, it's probably filled with bourbon or whiskey rather than coffee. So I thought, well, fuck, I just recently got a very cool coffee mug, and it's going to just fit perfect with the whole idea. And, you know, I don't know how Grace knew, but I'm going to bring this bad boy to bear.
Jeez. Talking about pushing things into the summer. Yes. Right? Why don't you describe to us?
Yeah, so I'm sporting my new Christmas mug, coffee mug that Grace got me. It's a red mug with a brick wall, and it's got a lot of stockings hung around the rim of it, and it has words on it, much like you would find words on a DJ's mug, you know, that mm-hmm. might say something like, "I'd give a fuck, but I already gave it to your mom," something like that. This one here just simply says...
Is that a mug already? Because that should be a mug.
That should be.
That should be a t-shirt, yeah.
Anyway, this one just has these stockings hanging on it, and it says, "Well hung." So, I mean, I could understand Juan gave me this, but I'm not sure why Grace would give this to me.
Who said I picked that out?
Oh, shit, Juan.
Oh.
Nice. I saw it, and then Grace is like, "We need to get it."
Juan always has been a little bit of a fibber, too, so...
Mm. Wow. So I thought this was perfect.
Make sure you give Lee lots because he's going to really like this beer.
How am I? Mm. I love Bearlick when we went there. In fact, it was you guys. You, maybe.
Me.
Specifically.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah, after the Seattle trip, I was ruined. I went to one place. I went to the Horse Press. I had pints, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fuckers came along.
I'm thinking about the Bearlick time we went.
And then,
because I barely remember it.
Yeah, you were pretty shit-faced.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Grace, but then you guys like started taking me to all these new pubs that are popping up all over the place. I was like, I have no idea that these even existed, having been like drinking at one place for decades. So I'm really glad we're featuring Bearlick because it was a very special memory.
Awesome. It's a good place.
Expanding your mind.
You were.
And your palate.
Definitely. Well... Welcome back to Dread, Fright, and Brew. I'm Aaron.
I'm Lee.
Juan.
I'm Grace.
And tonight, or today, or whenever you're listening to this, I suppose, we're going to be talking about Pontypool.
What a interesting name and movie.
Yeah, well, it's a place.
Yes.
And I think it's a real place.
And is it actually in Canada?
Well, it has to be a real place, because there's a story about the guy who... wrote this. He's also a novelist, and he wrote a book and he needed a photo for the dust jacket, like, you know, authors will do. And he went to a place called Pontypool that had a cool bridge, and he took his photo there. And when his book came out and was, you know, a success or whatever, he thought to himself or said to somebody, "Well, now I owe Pontypool a book because, you know, they hooked me up."
Sure, that's cool.
So, yeah, it's a real place, apparently. Ontario, Canada, I suppose.
Nice.
And with that movie, we are pairing Bearlick Brewings, or I always say Bearlick, but it's not. It's Bearlick.
Yeah.
Yes. Bearlick.
You got to think of their bumper sticker. That's a Bearlick in the woods. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We're doing Bearlick Brewings New Noise IPA. Oh, I'm going to have to think about it. I've been saying Bearlick for so long, like I want to pronounce both. You know, vowels in there.
It's much like Languinitas.
It's much like that, yes.
I was hoping you had forgotten that one.
Oh, God, no, man. I had fucking word salad something fiercey the last podcast.
Man, that's tasty. I like that. So they brewed this beer for their third anniversary.
Hops.
Last year, 2017.
Lee's favorite.
Yeah.
So they
just
opened
kept it around, yeah.
2014. Yeah, it's a year round, I hear now, which is awesome. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's awesome. Not bad.
It's got a good malty character to it. I mean, the hops and the piney and the resins of it are definitely like building a good foundation.
Spectacles.
Oh, no. These are just some old piece of shits that I found at work.
Oh,
I
was like, what happened to your...
Every other reader that I've owned.
What happened to your little flimsies?
What happened to the little guys?
Oh, yeah. I had busted them suckers, but lifetime guarantee. What? So I just called them up and they're like, oh, okay, two new ones are on your way.
Wow, okay.
You broke both of them already?
I'm a beast.
Maybe you should
have it's because they just sit on your nose.
Glasses.
Like maybe if they had arms and stuff, they would stay on and
I refer to them
get broken.
As his Ebenezer Scrooge glasses because they just sit right there.
Totally.
Yeah, which ghost are you?
You just need a little
ghost of the pain in the ass.
I'm down with it.
There's a lot of Christmas talk.
Oh, I will haunt
you. It really is.
We're going to confuse everybody. Totally going
to. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
So before we talk about Bear Lake a little bit, what did you guys think of this movie?
Pretty interesting.
I purposely didn't want to talk about it at all before we press record because I kind of wanted to just see what everybody thought of it because it's different.
It's different. But I like it. It was good. Yeah, cool.
It was odd, but I like the style. And I like...
Definitely.
I like kind of the simplicity of it. Mm-hmm. That it leaves a lot to just kind of...
Yeah.
Your other senses. Because you're not necessarily seeing what's going on the whole time. So it's kind of cool.
Totally.
It was just kind of a different spin on a horror movie.
It definitely a different spin on a zombie movie. And I'm hesitant to call it a zombie movie, even though on their own cover that they produced of like the DVD and stuff, it says, you know, the year's most unique zombie movie, because somebody wrote that in a review. But
apparently they're not called zombies in the script or something.
They're called not.
Conversationalists.
Conversationalists.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think this movie was one of those ones where you're like, all right, it was cool. It had a neat premise. It kind of had you going for a while until you kind of figured out what they were trying to deliver to you. Mm-hmm. And then maybe it just kind of thinned out in the third act. But I'm happy to have had them make it because it was different. It was unique. It was a new spin. And anytime somebody does something like that or brings that new to the table, who knows who else is going to be inspired by that. And then the next thing you know, we're just going to have this snowball effect of other creative and ingenious scripts and movies out there. It immediately, though, and apparently after doing some research on it, it got the desired effect. It immediately reminded me of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
Yes.
The way they presented it.
And I was like, which was the major inspiration for it, is what I'm hearing. And also, this was produced as a film from a book. But it was also produced as a radio play.
Yes. Now, that's something I thought at the end of the movie. I was like, well, you know what? It was too long. Mm-hmm. They could have done this movie as like maybe a Twilight episode, you know, 30 minutes or maybe something a little longer. So when I read that they did it as a play, which was only about an hour, that would have been more of the perfect time for this.
I do think in the third act, like you were saying, it stretched time a little bit. Like it had already set up what was going on and made us believe that it was happening, which was important just because of what was happening. They could have gone straight to some resolution and it definitely kind of got off the path a couple times. But was this the first time that you guys all saw it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
I may have watched it at one point. So it turns out I owned this movie.
Awesome.
Cool.
Surprise.
With like a Blockbuster $1.99 sticker on it or whatever. So sure. I bought it randomly because I was like, oh, random cheap horror movie, cool beans. And parts of it seemed oddly familiar.
Okay.
So I feel like maybe I watched it at one point and I just
Did you buy it knowingly or was that like late fees where you actually now own it?
No, there was a Blockbuster that went out of business right down the road from my parents' house and I bought so many random movies.
Oh man, that was the best. The 4.45.
I was just like, all mine.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those, I was like, cool, sweet, random horror movie I haven't seen. $2, why not?
I don't remember what brought me around to watching it for the first time, but I saw it with Deanne a number of years ago, and we both, like, loved it. My reaction to it this time was totally different than it was when I watched it back then, because I still have all the memories of how much I loved it and wanting to see it very badly. I really still enjoy it, but I got way more lost in trying to figure it out this time. And maybe it was just because I knew I was going to be talking about it. But I think the first time I just enjoyed it as a movie. And as you guys said, like the setting and the uniqueness and all that stuff. And this time it felt a little more muddy because I think I was trying to figure things out and put things together.
Yeah. If you try to like analyze it, it gets a little bit.
Yeah. And
train wreck.
Grace was right. Spot on. I did the same thing when they start laying out the movie. You know, you're literally a couple of characters and you're in a recording studio of this, this, you know, secondhand broadcast station. And it's all about the dialogue. You know, and so your mind starts filling in the blanks when shit starts happening and fucking people start, you know, acting up. You don't see it.
No,
they don't show it. There's no huge thing. They just describe it and your mind starts filling it in.
I was listening to somebody that was talking about just that, and they were saying they like this movie because they can put it on like while they're cleaning the house, because there is never a moment when you need to be looking at the screen.
No.
And I think that's why it does play like a War of the Worlds, or why they probably chose to do a radio play for it, because it's all in your mind's eye.
You could totally just listen to this whole thing and still get pretty much the same effect.
And that being said, they got a lot of effect out of only seeing realistically four people's faces for an hour and a half. I mean, we see a couple other, you know, brief parts that we'll talk about, but four speaking actors that we see for the entire film, and pretty much one room. And again, there's another room here and there, but pretty much just that one spot. So they did a pretty darn good job with what they had in creating the atmosphere and stuff, I thought.
So the beer we paired with it is
New Noise. India Pale Ale.
That's fitting.
Yeah. That was kind of the first thing that I think drew us to this beer. Grace and I were talking about it, and was, of course, the name. B, the font they use on it, which I think was pretty cool. Reminded me very much of the opening scenes of this film.
Same color, too.
Yeah, same color and the same kind of vibe, where it looks like waveform. You know, it looks like audio. And
vocal wave of patterns.
And I thought that was very cool. And there's another reason why I think this beer is completely perfect that I'll dive into a little bit later when we're talking about the movie some more. But yeah, what do you guys think of this beer?
I like it.
It's super good.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I love Bear Lake because they're one of those breweries that they can do all the cool new styles and everything, but they still always have balanced, very clean beers. They're not doing the weird, crazy stuff. Although they have some weirder beers. But for the most part, they're doing classic styles really well.
You know? It's dry, which is surprising me. It's not often anymore we get a dry IPA to drink. Everything is gone.
So fruity, you know, juicy.
The New England IPAs. And
this is just a good West Coast.
Don't be knocking the New England IPAs. I think I've found a way that I can enjoy IPAs.
And I'm definitely not. I enjoy them.
They have their place.
Yeah, I don't think that they're the Renaissance that everyone is giving them full credit for, but I love them for sure. But Bear Lake, right here in Portland, Oregon, started, again, like so many of these brewers we talk about, by some homebrewers.
In a basement.
Ben Parsons, Richard Hall. And I guess they won a bunch of awards and did what people seem to do. And they thought, let's do this on a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. People like our beer. Our beer's doing well. And they've been friends since the 90s. I remember
that trip, too, because we remember we went in. Yeah, we were pretty drunk.
Oh, yeah. We were, because we had been a gigantic before
you
that.
You three idiots were drunk. I was driving your dumb asses.
They ordered food base from camp. The sports bar across the street, and they brought it to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
We had gone to Base Camp's Collabo Fest, so we had been at an entire beer festival.
That's where we had started.
And then we went to Gigantic and drank more.
And the Gigantic closed early, so then we ended up at Bear Lake.
Blitz Sports, yeah.
Yeah, Blitz.
Yeah, I went over to Blitz and got you guys food because you guys were getting stupid.
But I remember it just being one of those things where that particular trip, we're seeing all these different brew pubs that I'd never even seen before.
Because you didn't do the brewery hopping day trip or multiple day trip thing or any of that beforehand. And that's very much our speed. So
right on.
These guys got Oregon Small Brewery of the Year in like 2016 or 2017 at the Oregon Beer Awards.
16?
I don't remember.
Was that last year or the year before?
I
doesn't matter. Either way, they got it and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And they totally deserved it. Like, these guys are rocking it out. I have never had a beer from them that I've been disappointed by. From, you know, they do barley wines, they do stouts and porters and barrel-aged stuff, to really good IPAs and lighter things. They do, you know, do pilsners and a whole bunch of just fun lagers. And
they do a black IPA or a Cascadia really Dark Ale, whatever you want to call it. That's probably my favorite.
That's right up my alley.
I
think that's one of the ones that's coming out, that's out in cans now.
Absolutely amazing. And I've just drawn a blank on the spot. Name.
I'm drawing a blank on that place, pretty much. We should go visit it again.
I think we should. Yeah. I was actually there just about 3 weeks ago.
I never go there. What? It's not super close to where I work.
But yeah, this
Fair Lake's way better than sitting in traffic. Totally.
There's so much fruit in the nose of this. Mm-hmm. Like a mango-y, kind of a kiwi, sort of tropical
citrus. But it tastes more piney.
Yeah, and then...
It's kind of fantastic. I don't know what hops they use
tropical in this, but it's stone fruit.
I actually wrote them down. They used Cascade, El Dorado, Amarillo, and Azaka.
Mm.
And I'm actually becoming a big fan of the Azaka hops. But I can see how it has that aroma, but a very piney flavor. A little bit herbal, but very good.
Did you read the quote on the side?
I did not.
How can we expect anyone to listen if we are using the same old voice?
Hey, that's pretty great. Yeah, I didn't read that either. All tying in just so well.
Right.
To what we're going to talk about this evening. I like their motto, which is the beer here is near and dear. And I also like that motto, again, because of how it ties in with Pontypool and the verbiage of that and the repetitive syllables and some of those things that are going to become...
Which play huge into the...
Very important.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this is another one where it pairs with our film on so many levels
that
this is the beer you're drinking if you're watching Pontypool.
As IPAs go, it's not bad. It's all right. But I'm not going to get on
the... That's actually a really huge compliment.
Yeah, that's high praise. That's high praise. I'm not going to get on the
IPA
kick. How are you feeling about New Noise? You're just drinking.
I love it.
Yeah,
mine's... Well, just quietly drinking.
Mine's good. It's really good to get back into a traditional Northwest IPA.
Sure, definitely.
You know, which is still my favorite. I will partake in some more.
Well, I think we're going to have a Lee beer featured pretty soon here. Maybe even next. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, and I was glad that we were getting IPA again for the podcast. We've been doing darks for a while.
We really have. Well, and that's the thing, as you move through winter, you know, we want to review things that are available that people can find. And so that's what's sitting on our shelves when we go looking and hunting. Yeah, so Pontypool, set in Canada, I have forgotten his name already. It's time to go to the notes.
The actor?
Although the actor, I've seen that guy in a lot of stuff without ever realizing I saw him in a lot of stuff.
So yeah. I gotta show you guys this. So I'm the idiot that brings
Grant Mazzie is the DJ guy.
Yeah,
I couldn't think of the word.
Stephen McCaddy is the actor. So that's what I was struck with too, Aaron. So I'm the idiot that brings visual aid to an audio podcast.
Yeah, we've known.
You need lots of aid.
So there's only like a page kind of notes on him, and like kind of what he is. But look at his fucking film and film and TV credits. Okay, this goes all the way back to 1970, right? This is filmed. Yeah. Films.
Mm-hmm.
Films.
Page two. We're going to page three.
Films.
Mm-hmm. He's licking his finger between turning pages, and he's wearing his college professor specs.
All of those pages are
Is he Canadian?
Look at that. I don't know what that's all about, but maybe.
I think he is.
So could he be the Canadian?
The only reason I say I think he is because his co-star in this film, Lisa Houle, who plays the producer...
Okay.
Sydney, the radio station producer. They're married in real life.
Oh. I always think that's cool.
And both of them are in a lot of Canadian television shows and Canadian films and films that are stateside films, but that are filmed in Canada.
He could be the Canadian Tom Atkins, dude.
So
he's up there. Because, I mean, when you look at all these pages that I printed out, he's not just doing like a movie, you know, a year or a TV thing a year. He's got... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things he's done in 88, 7 things he's done in 89, 14 things he did in 94, 2000.
What would be his most well-known works then?
Well, that's what I wrote on my notes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That we would know.
Aaron actually read the notes.
This is
the one that jumped out to me. He is Night Owl. In Watchmen.
The original Night Owl.
He's also
one of the statesmen or the loyalists in 300.
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And then television shows, I recognize him from Orphan Black and The Strain.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in both of those. So, yeah, I had seen him many, many times prior to this, but up until looking this up, I've always, when I see him, go, oh, it's Pontypool. That's Pontypool guy. I haven't really realized he's got a good body of work.
But he is. He's that guy that you, like, see all the time.
Sure.
And he's, you know, that really interesting sort of...
Well, he should be on radio. Because his voice is so absolutely perfect. Yeah. Like, and they say that's what you want. If you're going to be on radio, you want that voice that, like, draws people in and captures attention and kind of sucks people into the radio.
So great casting on this movie's part, then, for him. Playing a DJ.
Totally. Yeah. But that happens while you're watching the film. When he moves up close to the mic and he puts on that gravel in the voice and he starts talking like he's talking to his radio audience, man, you are just in it. And I'm glad, actually, that there is this version outside of the radio play version, because I think even his persona and his facial expressions while he's, you know, doing these radio broadcasts is just so spot on.
Yeah, you don't get that way without having some, you know, some notches on your belt.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, this guy goes back to the classics like One Adam 12 and Kojak and Starsky and Hutch. I mean, he's had spots in all of those things.
Really?
Yeah, to Deep Space Nine. Any of you guys ever seen Lex?
Yeah, a couple episodes.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of it. God, Farscape.
Oh, okay.
One of my two sci-fi favorite TV shows. But man, yeah, no, this guy's just all over the place. He's done an incredible amount of work.
It's good they got such a good actor, because, like we're saying, you've got basically four people that are on screen with speaking roles.
Yeah.
One of them, the doctor, is there for, 20 minutes, maybe 15 minutes?
Yeah.
And even then, very little during that time. So, yeah, it's good that they got folks with some chops. He's going to be in another movie with his wife, Lisa Howell, or Howell, I'm not sure how you say it, coming up in, I think, later this year, actually.
Oh, nice.
So I'm excited about that. And it's a genre piece. It's a horror film. There wasn't a whole lot about it when I was looking into it, but
keep an speaking eye out. Of wives, he was apparently previously married to Meg Foster.
Really?
What? Yeah. And you look at this guy. Yes. I would never picture it, because he's a little weathered, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of that Lance... Henriksen.
Yes. No D. Very good. Yeah, watch your syllables and your P's and Q's with this one. We don't want to get infected.
Shit, yeah, that's funny. Nice tie in there.
So he plays Grant Mazzy. Grant Mazzy is, we kind of just learned through inference, really, that he was a big shock jock at some point. Mm-hmm. He was a big deal on a big radio station, somewhere pretty important, and has lost that job and has been, you know, relegated to this, you know, Pontypool, which I can't say it's...
You get the small town, like, they're in the basement of the church.
Yeah, that's where the broadcasting is.
That's a great way to put it. I was about to say, in this small town, I'm like, we don't see the town. We only see the big one.
Well, they definitely make it seem like it's this little tiny, like, podunk. Everybody knows everybody's business.
Every caller in that calls in, you know, they know their name. They know their family.
Yeah.
They know what street they live on. So, pretty small burg.
Yeah, in fact, there's a point when he jokingly tees off on the capabilities of the police.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And he makes a comment about them drinking. They must be drunk and blah, 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 blah. And then the producer, his wife, which I forget what character she plays. She's
Sydney.
Like, Sydney, name, yes. Yeah. She's talking in the background and she's like, you know, Bud actually is an alcoholic, and so-and-so is recovering currently. So, yeah. You know, can you please bring it down a little?
Totally. Yeah.
There were many instances where she had to rein him in because she knew anything and everything about everyone in the town.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was a really cool, subtle, like, I don't know, colorfulness to the script.
It really was.
You know?
It was cool watching him be reined in.
Attempted to be
reined in. By the responsibility that he now faces. Because you would think that when you're talking to, you know, a million people on a radio show, you have a greater responsibility. But you don't. Because there's nothing personal between you and them at that point. Anything you say that pisses off 100,000 of those people pleases the other 900,000.
Yeah. And in fact, that's his thing too.
Sure.
He says to him, he's like, look, man, drama. you want to get listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You want people to fall asleep while you listen. Then you don't do what you've been doing. I'm here. I know what I'm talking about. You piss the people off.
Definitely.
Because then they stand up and they take notice and they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And she's basically just trying to throttle him around the neck because there's only 200 people.
Yeah. So she's like,
you know, if you piss off 100 of them, you're done. But you do see that dawning on him as he's telling his stories and his anecdotes and kind of poking fun at the local news and things like that. And I thought that was kind of cool that there's more responsibility speaking to less people.
Yeah, very much so.
And talking about responsibility, he is responsible for the events of this film. And this movie opens on a super cool monologue. And I say super cool because of how it makes you feel and how it sounds. Not because of what it is. It's about a missing cat.
Yeah, and that was the first thing that really got my visuals going. You know, all you saw was this voice wave.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard his voice.
Yeah.
And he's talking about this cat and the
missing posters.
Posters everywhere. And then he goes into this diatribe about Pontypool and what the breakdown of the name was and everything like that. And I'm sitting there thinking like, oh shit, there's like something mystical about this fucking bridge that he's talking about. And this cat's going to like somehow play a huge part in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I've already got this whole like vision.
Yeah.
Just in the first, 30 seconds of the narrative.
Yeah. And then it opens up and he's just a grizzled old radio personality in the basement of a church. But at the same time, that opening monologue does set up all those things. We just don't get to see them. So I'm not going to beat around the bush 100 times because I mean, that's what the movie is all about. But there is a virus in this film, much as there would be in a zombie movie, or I think it's much more of an infection movie, this film, than a zombie movie.
It's kind of an outbreak situation.
It's more like The Crazies
or infection films.
It's a super refreshing sort of change of pace in what they're calling a genre, you know, outbreak kind of film.
Totally.
Wasn't expecting that
at all. Well, I think it needed to happen. And, I don't know if it needed to happen when this movie came out or now after The Walking Dead, even, you know, the like kind of pinnacle of our modern zombie entertainment is also kind of, you know, starting to feel its age and wear down on fans and things. But it needed to happen because since Night of the Living Dead, zombie films have been zombie films. Some of them run and some of them shuffle.
Yeah.
But other than that, they eat you and you have to destroy the brain.
Right.
And in some of the mythos, you know the word zombie and the characters look at them and go, are these zombies? And in most of the mythos, they don't. So it's a surprise. They've never experienced anything like this before and have no name for it. But they're still the same.
They've thrown in some things along the way, which I think has kept you just interested enough. Mm-hmm. When they did the remake, Dawn of the Dead, and all of a sudden those zombies were fast.
Sure.
Or when they 20 did days later, 28 days later, when they're more of a virus thing. Exactly.
And that's the thing. There's a lot of different impetus of how it starts in these films. You know, whether it's a space satellite that crashes down and brings, you know, microbes with it.
Which is super cool. I didn't realize. I just actually recently watched Night of the Living Dead, and I didn't realize that they blamed it on the meteor or the satellite that crashed.
Brought stuff down. But it still infected people, you know.
I always preferred
people from dying when they died.
Yeah. I always preferred the line that they used as explaining zombies. Was just that when there's no more room in hell, the dead walk the earth.
Yes.
And that, I thought, was fucking perfect. I thought, exactly, right there.
Right there on the poster, yeah.
I thought that's the only thing you ever need. You don't need an explanation.
Exactly, and that's a super cool reason. Yep. I mean,
oddly enough, and I don't know if they took this from it, but oddly enough, in ancient Sumerian, there's some literature that exists still. And they talk about one of the gods, and that's pretty much what she says. She said, I will rule the earth by bringing the dead to the surface.
Hmm.
And so I'm like, oh, there you go.
There it is.
When I've filled my kingdom, I will take over the living earth.
Yeah. Goals, you know.
Even gods have to have goals.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels. I don't know. I felt that it was time that we had something that had a different kickoff than a bacteria or a virus or, space dust or, just something completely inventive and unique.
And this is. Holy shit, this is. Yeah, something about words.
It's words.
Something about repetitive words, words of endearment.
Yeah.
Right? And then understanding those words somehow for different people in different ways sets off some kind of chemical rabies or something in the brain.
So in the book that this was, this movie was based on, which was called, Welcome to Pontypool or something.
It was like Pontypool.
Pontypool changes everything.
Changes everything.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. They called what happens here the acquired metastructural pediculosis, or AMPS. AMPS. Clever.
Fuck.
And it is a virus, but it is not a physical virus, like a strand of, you know, DNA, genetic information that comes into you and messes you up. It's like it's transmitted within sound waves, which has a scientific term, which is actually called memetics, which is where the word meme comes from. It's passing information, you know.
So what you're saying is Facebook, Twitter, all of these places
is a virus.
Is a virus.
And oh, I am absolutely
soon. Saying that. Very soon, these memes are going to fucking break out into fucking face-eating zombie shit.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But I think it's cool that
so meme on people.
He took a science that you know has some factual basis and said, well, let's play with that. What could pass through words? So it's just like a traditional virus. You know, whether it's what we're passing around the table right now or whatnot, some people are going to get it and some people aren't. Well, and it's different for every person.
Yeah.
And that's the same as this one.
It's
some words.
Super intelligent. It's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What it reminded me of too, not to interrupt you, but I just did apparently.
That's fair.
Was what John
Give
Carpenter.
Me a chance to drink more beer.
Yeah. You looked parched. you're looking a little gray around the jowls.
Yes.
John Carpenter, Prince of Darkness.
Oh, yeah.
He took some science, and he's like, man, I'm going to take science, I'm going to explain religion in a different way, and I'm going to explain evil differently. Mm-hmm. This reminded me a little bit of that kind of take.
Totally. And I think this is a further leap of faith than what we saw there or in a lot of other films that kind of bring in some, you know, fact-based stuff and then give it a twist. And I think it's only because we can't see this happening. Like, there's no way to show this happening. Like, even in Prince of Darkness, we had Satan Juice. And we had the ancient texts.
That never gets
and
old.
They could change. Hey, we coined that. We got to use it. It has the news stories that you can see being broadcast that show the supernovaing star. And it's all backed up by, you know, scientists on TV being interviewed. So there's a lot of visual stuff that you look at and go, oh, okay, I get it. But in this film, you literally just have like three people talking about it and kind of theorizing. Honestly, they don't even know. They're just like, well, maybe it's this.
Yeah, and I think that too, you said, you know, maybe we've talked about it too much already, but I'm not so sure, because that's a big part of this movie is the fact that your imagination is really filling in the gaps. That's the big success of this movie. And I can imagine it would be even more incredible, I think, via the radio play.
I can see that. A couple of people sitting in a room listening to it, you know, being spooked, because this movie spooks you.
Yeah.
And I actually turned to Deanna at one point while we were watching it last night, and I was like, man, do you feel this? Like, when this music starts up and there's surprising information being dropped on us through the airwaves of this radio station, and we have a, you know, tight shot of his face while he's, you know, sitting behind
like
the mic.
Right and there.
Just like that one. Exactly. You get that horror movie stuff. You get the shortness of breath. You get the tightness in your chest. You start to get the little pinpricks, and you're like, oh, my goodness, what's going on? What's happening here?
It's called a heart attack,
and,
Aaron.
Yeah, that's right.
You're getting up there, man.
All right, well, I know. Maybe that. But, yeah, it makes you feel quite a bit, even though you're not seeing very much at all. And so I think on radio that would be pretty awesome, too.
Yeah.
Dark room. Well, this disease, this virus that's being passed from person to person is only picked up with certain words, and it is only then it's contagious via the words, but you only contract it when you understand the words. Yep. So when the word has a meaning to you and it's therefore kind of absorbed by you. And at that point, you are now a conversationalist, as they call them.
Well, I'm safe, man, because nobody ever understands what the fuck I'm saying.
That's true. That's true. But yet we just, you know, we leave a shout out for you.
No, I appreciate it. Except for Juan. Right, Juan?
That's true.
Linguinitis. Yes, I do.
We are told a little bit about it. We mentioned it where words of endearment are more threatening, I guess. And I'm guessing that's just because you absorb those faster because they're personal to you, that sort of thing. But that's why that monologue at the beginning of this film sets it all up. Because he keeps talking about this cat, Honey. Honey the cat. And he keeps saying it over and over and over again. And
I guess Mama June is pretty hot, by the way. Sorry.
Which one?
If she got the suction.
He mentioned Honey Boo Boo.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I just know the name Honey Boo Boo.
Dude, it is a train wreck that you have got to watch, man.
No.
No, it is. It absolutely is. You have to at least watch like a episode.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
I don't... I'm not going to take a hard pass on that. I am not...
You watched that on your granny tab?
Condoning it.
Talk about viruses being passed through...
that
sound
that
would visual.
That Honey Boo Boo... You see a little picture of that kid on, like, the Facebooks or whatever like that? That little mongoloid. Oh, my God.
Is that the fat little thing, like, running and his jacket's, like, kind of coming off? Is that the Honey Boo Boo kid?
No, it's the chubby little blonde, like, curly-haired girl that there's, like, a million different memes of.
Yeah.
I probably have seen one.
If you saw a picture of her, you would know who it is because it was on Facebook forever when it was on
Just to see pictures of it and stuff
like
that.
I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know who Mama June is, though.
Oh, Mama June's the mom. Oh, she's the greatest redneck ever, and apparently she got a new show out called From Not to Hot. Yeah. Your curiosity's peaked right there.
No, I was just thinking you should cut your cable.
No, you know what? That sounds like horror.
That saved all that.
It sounds like horror, man. It's like Wrong Turn. It's like Hills Have Eyes.
No.
Not the Hills Have Thighs. The Hills Have Eyes. Well, that Hill has Thunder Thighs, apparently.
No.
Thunder.
Hey, this is a good IPA.
It really is. Yeah, we're going into our third bottle.
Going fucking right through it.
Look at you, Lee, putting your regular pants on.
Hey, it's the only way to fight the plague, man.
Yeah.
Then scotch.
That's true.
I love the fact that this movie doesn't play a lot on gore, by the way.
Yeah, I enjoy that, too. It's surprised me, actually. I thought there was going to be some in it, but it's actually...
There's a little bit, but not much.
Not a lot, though.
Yeah, just a moment or two.
Yeah, just a moment or two and not anything just brutal. I mean, it's more suspense-driven for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it was.
Well, and it's
in anticipation of what I thought was going to happen and what we were going to see and whatnot, which ends up not really.
Yeah, that was a big part for me, too.
It left a lot to the imagination, you know, which was kind
of
cool.
That's the thing. If there was a big payoff at the end, like in every other damn movie, you know, the end of some like Resident Evil film where she walks outside of the conclave and sees the whole world is destroyed and smoking this. I think that would have been really crappy.
It would have been formulaic and predictable. For sure.
It's way better that this film makes you imagine a lot of stuff and pays off almost none of it. So you're like, well, is it the way I'm thinking it is?
No, I was happy with the ending of the movie. A lot of times I'm not. You know, I do want a resolution of some sort, but this one I was absolutely fine with it.
Did you guys watch the scene after the credits?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Which apparently was how the original ending was.
But yeah, that was pre-credits before.
It was too confusing.
So I completely agree with their decision.
Yeah.
Because I missed it the first time around and caught it this time. Mm-hmm. And I could see where they were going with that.
So stay for the pre-credits.
Yes.
Or post-credits.
Post-credits.
Fiction, non-fiction, I don't know.
Well,
he's got the virus.
exactly how it goes.
One of the evidence that you have contracted this virus is your brain gets stuck on this word. They theorize that this is an autoimmune response. So if your word, you know, happens to be puppy that can pass the infection to you, that's the word you'll say. And you kind of puppy.
Yeah, it's
puppy,
almost like puppy a dog, tick puppy, at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so people can kind of go, uh-oh, this person's about to go.
Peculiar. Peculiar.
Go completely crazy. What's cool about the reason they theorize that that's like an autoimmune response is that I'm losing my train of thought here because totally, these two clowns are
totally bozos over here.
Yeah, I don't even remember what I was going to say.
Gore. Nice work, idiots.
Yeah, right on. Good. Now we can talk.
That's like the 12th time.
I know. Start keeping tallies of pennies.
We should. We should have a little chalkboard. How many times we derailed?
Stop talking unless he's talking.
The gore. One scene.
Grody.
I thought it was super cool. Just her bashing her head against the window of the booth. Yeah. And then you're like, all right, whatever. And then she disappears. Mm-hmm. And then she freaking shows up having chewed her own lips off. Mm-hmm. And she's all like puffy and like, get that girl an EpiPen or something. That was very cool and unexpected.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's the kind of zombie presentation of this, is that once you've become infected and you are now a conversationalist, you follow voice and you seek out voices and you attempt to apparently like – enter the mouth or chew your way or eat your way through the mouth of your victim or something. And again, all of this is just conjecture from these three people locked in a basement. So
they're just trying to figure it out themselves. And basically it's you following their journey of trying to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Cause they're kind of basically isolated from everything that's happening. They're finding out little bits of information from, what's his face in the Sunshine Chopper.
Ken in the Sunshine Chopper.
Which is his Dodge Dart.
So good.
Which I was like, yeah, it was something ridiculous like that. But
he doesn't have a chopper. He just drives around in a Dodge Dart because it's a fucking small town.
You know, and all of that goes back to how that small town feel really builds this film.
Mm-hmm.
This town's fine with the fact that Ken in the Sunshine Chopper is him sitting up on a hill in his damn Dodge Dart.
And everybody knows it.
They know it. They don't care. They love it. He can see the road from there. He can tell you whether there's traffic or not. You know, and I think by having it be such a small town and everybody knowing everybody, when you do get those small glimpses of when somebody's afflicted and starts hurting themselves and, you know, doing all these things, it's not like your typical zombie movie where there's just these random zombies. You're like, oh, let's just shoot them, whatever.
Yeah, disconnected. These are
people you know.
Yeah. And I think it also makes it pretty terrifying that they're not dead.
No.
So you don't have that disconnect. Because even when it is someone you know, but they've died and come back, you're like, well, it's not them anymore.
These are your neighbors that are sick.
Yeah.
And you want to help them, but you can't because you have to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that builds this tension and a dynamic that you wouldn't get in like a normal zombie movie or in a, you know, in a big city or something like that. It's, you know, when Ken's talking about whatever lady's son.
Yeah.
The big, so-and-so's big boy, you know.
Yeah. And everybody the producer in town instantly knows. Is like, oh, Kevin, or whatever his name was.
Yeah, the producer knew exactly who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it makes it that much more personal and it makes it that much more intense.
Yeah.
Because it is that kind of that family small town vibe of.
Well, and then it had that, there was kind of a cool little breakdown in the middle of the film, maybe 2/3 of the way through, where they start recapping some of the carnage as it's being reported to them.
Oh, the,
but he's just kind of, recapping it to himself. But while he's saying it, we get to see like these family photos of the people he's talking about, you know, and it's like Mrs. Johnson today, you know, ended the life of so-and-so and so-and-so and their son so-and-so, who before he died also killed the, you know, Smiths from, and they just go through this whole thing. Everyone had a name. No one was like a faceless person anymore. So that we were like, oh, this is like some farmer, small town folk that are just munching each other.
Yeah, that was pretty creepy. I remember that because he was like, you know, something like Betty Jo, 25, killed Sally Smithers, 12, and mother, you know, June, hot mom, 48, before she killed, you know. And it was, and this went on for I don't know how long.
Not as long as in the Bible where it goes through the begats. And Methuselah begat. Who begat. No, there's a lot of them. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Begattings. There's a lot of begatting going on back then.
Yeah, there was.
Not a lot else to do.
No.
I like the fact that it implies that he started this with his monologue. Because that kind of brings it full circle, that it's all, you know, he's sitting in this room trying to figure out how he can report this story, because they're getting calls and little, you know, information tidbits from here and there.
The police scanner.
That there's riots going on, or that there's an explosion somewhere, or that a bunch of people are being killed by other people in the streets, and that the military is rolling in, and all of this stuff is being told to him, and he's trying to figure it all out. And I love that this little variety piece that he recorded the day previous while at work is what set this all into motion when it airs that morning while he's on his way into work.
I was confused about that, because they centralize a little bit around Ken reporting the disaster at a doctor's office and a riot. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the military showing up.
Yeah.
Which is all staples in any zombie flick, you know.
Sure.
And you make you wonder, oh, was this something the military set off? Because then all of the stories seem to be blacklisted because the producer and her assistant can't find anything on it.
Sure. I think it's just because there's such a tiny town. And I think we're overthinking the military connection. I don't think that happens until pretty late in the movie.
Yeah.
Because they call them the something police.
Yeah.
And it sounds very militaristic, but I just don't think I understand the hierarchy of Canadian law enforcement cops, and such. Yeah.
It's the mounted police.
But I think it's
Dudley Do Right.
But I think it started on a smaller, more local scale. And the way I see it happening is that the day before the events of this film, he records that piece. It airs that morning, just on air while he's driving in to work. And we're listening to it kind of as he is. He has that run-in as he gets to the bridge with a lady who's obviously infected.
Oh, yeah.
The first one we see, who walks up to his car door and keeps saying blood, 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 blood. And he gets to work and all's well.
That's right.
Because it's kind of just started.
It has such interesting and creepy and thoughtful little moments. Mm-hmm. I completely forgot about that one, because then he comes in and he's like, hey, listeners, when do you call 911? I got a question for all of you. Let's explore this.
And the first time I saw the film, I remember thinking that it started at this doctor's office, so it must be some kind of real virus.
Right.
But I think instead what it was were people were getting sick at home and going to this doctor's office because they couldn't figure out what was going on. But as we learned while watching this film, just like zombies, these people attract to each other and attract together, especially the infected, by following the voices and the words of other infected. So I think
as the
sick ones were going, it just became the hub.
Right.
And I think that was also probably intentional, because it seems so much of this was written from a real cerebral place that, you know, I haven't been able to reach with it. But I'm sure that was intentional, where they wanted us to kind of go, oh, it's at the doctor's. Is it a virus?
There was a lot of different leading parts of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like the gal on the side of the road, and then the doctors, and then the military, you know. I was all over the place with my imagination going, where does this come together?
And it followed all the steps of a zombie film.
Yeah.
The outbreak, the couple of people trying to figure out what's going on, and the military, and the responses, and all that. And you just don't see it. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I think what was different was the lack of information in this one. Like, the reason, I mean, they spend the whole time, the producers are trying to figure out, you know, they're like basically yelling at Mazzy, you know, oh, don't say that on air yet. We don't know. Nothing's concrete. We can't verify any of this stuff. And of course, he just keeps talking because he's
Mazzy,
a radio guy. And
right. He's a shock
job. That's his thing. But I think that's that we're finding it out as they're finding it out. And I feel like that's more of an issue in this one than it is in some zombie films. I mean, you kind of find it out, you know, along the way, but you feel more in it in this one.
Sure.
Because they don't know what's going on either. Usually there's like, oh, you know.
Well, so as Joe Blow runs in and tells you, oh God, this just happened.
And they hand it to you on a platter.
Well, as an audience,
this is what happened.
Like I was saying, we've seen it every time the same way. Oh, it's a virus. That's whatever. You're going to have to shoot him in the brain by the end of this thing. So when do they figure out you have to shoot him in the brain? Like, we're waiting for them to catch up with what we already know.
Yeah.
And it's totally the opposite here, where we're with the people that know nothing. Shit,
we're clueless too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was kind of cool.
I like how it, sort of the development of Mazzy's or the character Mazzy, how at the beginning he's like, hey man, we got a radio show to do. You know, if you can't give me the information, I'm going to, you know, carry this shit and I'm going to like get things going.
Yeah.
And then as it starts developing, he starts getting a little more personal and he actually starts becoming surprised and stunned. And he's starting to sort of feel the tragedy to the point where he's, I think there's just dead air. And he's just like sitting there in his mind going, oh my God, what is really happening?
And we're wondering if he's getting infected.
Yeah.
At that point, at least I was.
So there's a lot of range here.
It's, I really like single set pieces. You know, I like films that narrow the scope down. So, you know, Devil, it's all in an elevator pretty much, or Buried. I really love that film. Buried.
The Ryan Reynolds
movie. Yeah.
That was really good. It's really good.
So engaging. There's another one I really love. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's all takes place on a guy while he's on his car phone. He's driving the entire film. Oh, gosh. It has...
I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't seen it, though.
Bane. What's that guy's name?
Tom Hardy.
Yeah. Tom Hardy's in it. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Really engaging. And then all the way back to, like, Rope or Rear Window from Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, he even understood... You can narrow focus down a whole bunch and still have a lot of power of emotion and leading people. But yeah, I'm really happy that something came along to shake up just the genre.
The genre, yeah.
And I can see why. Apparently, this was to be the first of a trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually had the second two movies planned out before making this one.
It'll be interesting to see if they bring it.
Yeah, I think at this point, though, we're far enough that...
Well, you're right. This was done in 2008, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it actually didn't...
10 years later.
It didn't do that great.
Yeah, critically acclaimed. People love it. Viewers love it. It has great scores everywhere you go that has a scoring mechanism. But...
The money wasn't there, was it?
I don't think they raked in a bunch of money because it had a tiny release. You know, it wasn't a big stateside release. It was mainly video stores. But not only that, but it's... It's not going to be approachable for everybody. I mean, I can see a lot of folks just real. I think it's going to be another one of those, and somehow we keep stumbling onto these. This must be our taste in movies, but it's going to be a very polarizing. You're either going to like it a whole bunch, or you're going to be like, what the crap? That is garbage.
What are these bozos talking about? But even so, I love the fact that we're throwing some shit out there that people may not have heard of. I never heard of fucking Pontypool.
Okay.
But now I'm like, hey, this was cool. This was
apparently I had heard of it enough. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah,
Grace. I had heard of it. I'd seen the video in the Blockbusters or something back in the day, like you said, where you got the thing, you know, the movie itself. I knew the name. I'd never seen it, and I'd forgotten about it. I just, you know.
Yeah.
But as soon as you said Pontypool, I was like, oh, that's that weird movie, that weird name.
This might be the first one we've had on the show so far where we actually saw the beer. And Grace and I were talking, and she said something like, oh, I wonder if there's anything we could, you know, pair with this. And I turned and looked at it, and I saw the logo. Mm-hmm. And I went, new noise. Oh, God, Pontypool. Just like,
I was like, oh my goodness.
And so, we worked on it back and forth a little bit. We looked into it a little bit more. And so let's talk a little bit more about that. So on Bearlick's website, they have a little blurb about the etymology of the word Bearlick. Etymology being, of course, the study of vocabulary, words, and their meanings, which I think that's super cool. That's on their website. And what it's talking about on there is that Bearlick, as it's spelled here, is an old English word meaning of barley. But they say that they're trying to update the meaning of that word. And they say, we want you to use it whenever you want to describe something that you can't get enough of, as in, these waffles are Bearlick. And I thought
they were trying to refer to a bunch of drunken fools showing up at their place.
Right.
Can't get enough of that.
Well, what I love so much about that is that's right there on their website, describing their name and, of course, the beer we've paired with this. And in this film, the solution that these guys come across to try to save themselves is to change the meaning of words.
Yep.
Up is down. Because, kill is kiss. Because you cannot be infected if you don't understand the word you're hearing. And so just like, that's where I was going earlier when I was talking about some things. If you've ever said a word to yourself so many times that it's meaningless – So you know, just get on a word like, let's say waffle, and you say waffle, 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 waffle. You say it for a good minute or so, and it doesn't mean waffle anymore. It's just sound. You ever done that or had that as a kid?
No? Like Zaps chips, Aaron?
Like Zaps chips.
Fucking no.
That actually happens to me all the time. And apparently it happens to a lot of people. Cause...
It actually does happen to Aaron all the time. And if he's bothering me, I'll say one of his keywords.
I'm saying when you hear a word or you say a word so many times in a row, or you hear something so many times over and over again, that it starts to lose its meaning.
Yeah.
It's just muddy
sound.
It gets
lost. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I love that the people in this film, when they hear a word that has the virus, they repeat that word over and over again as though their body is trying to kick it. It's trying to say, hey, let's lose this real quick. Let's lose this.
Which is actually... A couple of super cool things that really got the imagination going on this is when the like Ken and maybe it was another caller actually call in, or she calls and talks to her kids and they start turning over the phone.
Yes.
And you can hear that. You can hear that stroke. Mm-hmm. You can hear that turn. And it was so creepy, especially when she calls and talks to her mom. And then when Ken finally succumbs to the virus.
Ken goes on air.
Yeah. Super, super creepy. That one gave me a little bit of chills.
Well, yeah, it was terrible when she's sitting on she being the producer.
Yeah.
She's sitting
Sydney.
Sitting on the floor up against the back of the sound booth talking to her daughter on the cell phone, who's at home, and basically infecting her because she's saying, don't worry, sweetie, or, oh, yeah, this nice honey. And she says honey like three or four times. And the whole time I'm like, don't say honey, don't say honey, don't say honey. That's how this whole thing started. And, you kind of have that knot in your stomach of like, I think she might be killing her kid by talking to her kid, trying to calm her down right now. Very kind of oddly powerful.
And shortly after that, we see – so the one thing that I thought was goofy – is this doctor who Ken reports that this zombie, this horde is, you know, attacking his building and it explodes and bodies go flying everywhere and all this. Later on in the film, the doctor actually shows up at the radio station and crawls in. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure why. That maybe it's, I don't know. Maybe there's a reason to it. I just thought
he's running from the mob.
Yeah, but... of all places to go to, the place where our characters are telling their story.
It just seems like a church.
Well, I think it's because their story is being broadcast to the town. So the only voice that's getting out to the town that is obviously not infected is going to be the people he's listening to on the radio.
Okay, so well, that makes sense because he goes and he starts talking.
It's probably like five blocks because he says he's been crawling around corners and like hiding in alleys and stuff.
The snow.
To get there.
Yeah.
So you get the idea he's just been kind of moving across town a little bit.
Well, that makes sense because he gets on air at one point and tries to tell people about it. One thing I thought was really cool is he actually starts getting infected.
Yes.
And so he goes into speaking like...
it's like Armenian or something.
I think it was. Yeah. He totally turns it because apparently the English language is the one that is more susceptible.
Mm-hmm. And I think this movie would be even more powerful if you were watching it in its native Canada, because you've got a French/English-speaking country. And in a lot of places, Montreal, in instance, there is actually some language issues between that. And you've got French people that speak predominantly French and then English people that speak predominantly English. So I think – and they work that into this film a little bit, talking about like, is this actually like – terrorism to get rid of English-speaking people because it only apparently affects you in English.
Well, and there was a while where Mazzy and Sydney were just speaking to each other in French to help themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, his broken, like, college version.
His, like, really craptastic French. But they could at least communicate enough.
Sure.
They both knew enough words where they could kind of figure out what the other one was meaning.
And I like that they start writing things down and doing all of that. I mean,
they tried a few different ways to do that. And in fact, I thought it was funny when they first started speaking French, they didn't put any subtitles.
No.
For a little while, you were like, okay, all right. I thought
that was maybe just the copy I was watching because only like three or four words had subtitles. But they said like.
A bunch
of stuff. Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. So if it was just a fucked up copy, then whatever, but it worked.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool. Like, hell, they're trying to communicate and we can't understand it.
And we shouldn't. Because I've actually enjoyed that in several films that choose not to subtitle the foreign languages. And I'm like, hey, this is kind of cool because now I'm that, you know, third person in the room and I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, so, I've got to rely on the story coming across to me through, you know, visual body motion, you know, inflections of the language that I can't understand, things like that.
I think a lot of that goes back to when I was growing up, too. I watched a lot of things that weren't in English and didn't have subtitles or translations. I mean, when I first started getting into, you know, anime and that sort of thing was before any of it was released here in the States. And there definitely weren't English subtitles on the laser discs we were bringing home from, you know, San Francisco, yeah. Chinatown.
Well, it's a pretty sweet score when you're watching Japanese anime tentacle porn and you actually do get some with subtitles. Yeah. Save that one for when Grace walks back in the room. Like
the fourth time we've discussed Japanese tentacle porn animated.
I don't know that we've discussed or Lee has brought it up.
I don't know, but all I know is gift giving for Lee over the next several years is
easy
porn. Yeah, it's going to be super easy.
Tentacle God, really? Have I mentioned it that many times?
Yeah. I think it's been at least 4 or 5 times.
I thought
times,
it was German dungeon porn.
No, it's usually
tentacle. Yeah, I got to come up with some new stuff.
I think you were actually watching some.
He said, "Come up with some new stuff," as though he doesn't have a portable DVD player full of it in his glove box right now.
Bullshit! It's on that granny tab.
That's right. That's right, baby. Oh boy, have you guys seen Kronos? It's a Guillermo del Toro movie.
The weird timekeeping system.
Yeah, exactly.
That the pain in the ass to work with.
Yeah.
No, not that. That's funny you said the weird timekeeping. And I was like, yeah, it's like a clockwork.
No, I've not seen it. Yeah.
It's a vampire film.
Okay. Hmm.
But it's not because it doesn't have vampires in it. So
well, fuck.
It's like this where it's a very cool and interesting and neat twist. It's actually kind of a clockwork device that is kind of the star of the show. Anyways, very good film. And I had several times where I reminisced to that in just how different this movie is to the genre it's portraying.
Well, I mean, I think we all have that kind of same sort of like, because the international films, mm-hmm. we totally dig. Because, man, they've got un-Americanized visions, you know, that is refreshing to some of the drug through the dirt genres.
Yeah. So as, I don't know, inventive or kind of unique as this film is, it didn't actually come up with this idea, and neither did the book, apparently. There's a book that we get a flash of in this film that is called Snow Crash.
Yes.
By an author, Neal Stephenson, which features, as they call it, an earworm, which is also about a mimetic virus, a meme virus that transmits itself through verbal information. So apparently this is like an idea.
It was already done in Wrath of Khan.
Well, ear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, baby.
Yes,
earworms.
It was.
Earworms.
Oh, yeah. God.
Wrath of Khan.
That
Wong.
Was like, I don't remember much of Wrath of Khan other than the yell. Uh-huh. And
everybody
that
remembers
scene.
That.
Just holding him down and you see it
fucking
crawling.
Letting it go right in.
Just that's it. And
oh, great movie.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that.
The best movie. Of all the movies. So.
I saw a behind the scenes thing on special effects where they, when the worm came out of the ear, because when they put it in, they drop it in his helmet, and then they stick the helmet over it and lock it in place.
Yeah.
And the motherfucker crawls in and you're like, that is like put a bunch of spiders in a.
Yeah.
Got a shiver out of him.
Juan's gone.
Oh, sucks that over your head. Uh-uh.
Fucking yeah.
But it was this giant ear, a giant mold of Chekhov's ear.
Oh.
And this thing was like huge. It was like the size of this table. And they had a puppeteer bringing this little tiny larvae come out of it. It was very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I watch movies sometimes and like, you know, a spider crawls out of someone's nostril or a fly comes out of their ear hole or something. And you're like, did they put that
in? Yeah.
I mean, nowadays you just assume, ah, it's just CGI. But there were some films before CGI was a thing and they were doing that.
Yeah, you knew that motherfucker was either doped up or one brave son of a bitch.
A real calm actor. We're going to put some bugs in your orifices.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't freak out.
Like Home Alone, mm-hmm. when the tarantula's on his face.
Oh, yeah.
He had to scream silently. They had to like do a recording of the scream to put in afterwards because they didn't want him to scare the tarantula.
and bite his face off.
Shit. Yeah.
Woo.
So, like, that was like a silent scream and just a face.
Juan's getting the creepy crawlers.
sorry.
He can't sit straight in his chair.
Okay, tarantulas, fuck all y'all.
Tarantulas aren't scary, first off. Now, I share Juan's fear of spiders, but I have no fear of tarantulas.
No, not to
this level. Well, not to this level.
This freaks out.
They're huge. You can see them. I'm scared of spiders because you can't see them coming. That's the
problem. You can see their eyes. It's fucking furry ass shit.
I'm not afraid of many things I can see. I'm afraid of things that are small that I can't see.
Hmm.
Like the mystery fish that bites your toes?
Like that.
Like the little nibblers.
Yeah.
Nibblers.
Viciously nibbled.
Well, I personally wouldn't know about being afraid of small things that I can't see.
Oh, God. Put your mug down.
All I heard was small things that he can't see. So.
Well, cool. Hey, I'm glad we all
found
something in this that we liked.
This was interesting. Definitely glad I saw it. Unique. I like new experiences. Whether or not I actually even care for it or not, which I didn't care for this. I did like it. But I like the newness, the weirdness, the outside the boxness.
You like all those nesses. Oh, you lost him.
He's infected already.
Yep. And it has an interesting ending, which, you know, we'll leave for the listeners, I suppose, right? Or did we already talk about it?
Well, we talked about the – did you talk about the after the credit scene? Or?
No, like the actual – maybe the attempt to cure the virus.
We mentioned it a little bit where you try to alter the meaning of a word so that your brain can't understand that word and thus isn't susceptible to the virus. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, that's right.
Without giving away a lot of stuff, but – yeah, and again, this is another movie that, like, I'm not really afraid to give any of it away, really, because there's so little of it.
Pay attention to the credits, though.
It's just the feeling and the atmosphere.
Because in the credits, and it is, it's a ton of atmosphere.
Yeah.
Amazing amount. But pay attention to the credits, because there's noise going on in the background that kind of gives you an idea of what did or didn't happen with the resolution of...
I started going through the credits and then caught some of that and went, oh, wait, I should be listening to this, and went back and actually listened all the way through.
Yeah.
But again, what a nice wrap up. You know, we don't need to see it. We just hear it, just like the whole rest of the film. It's not about what you're seeing.
Yeah, and the after credit thing, that was bizarre. I don't even know what it meant or why it was necessary, you know.
Well,
it made sense to me.
I didn't quite get it.
Well, what do you think?
I thought it was... Well, I feel like it totally gives everything away, though. Does
okay.
it matter?
Okay, spoilers alert. Everybody move ahead.
Yeah, we're pretty much done.
40 seconds.
I feel like it was nodding back to the obits in the middle of the movie. When the obituaries were happening, they did these weird little snippets in black and white of these people that had died.
Okay.
So, and then in the credits... They had become basically these characters of themselves, but they were in black and white.
Yeah, it went straight
and
Sin City.
And they were these weird, The Sin City part was a little weird, but to me it was basically, this is this weird snippet, this is their obituary.
Okay.
This is how they want to be remembered.
That's cool. See, that's not how
that's,
I took it.
That's
so
where
like
my
that.
Brain went.
That's cool.
I was like, I feel like this is them showing us what their obituary is.
I see.
Interesting, yeah, because they'd like choose different names,
and and then they just kind of, all right, let's get out of here.
Weird,
that's cool.
So that's how I read that final like post credit scene was that was their obituary, their last little.
That's cool. I took it just as if the world is coming to an end outside, and it's coming to an end because there's this verbally passed language virus. They then set about trying to change the meaning of language. And change the meaning of words. So they're pretty much changing. They're changing
their
everything.
Personas,
like,
too.
They're changing reality in a way. Yeah. And so I took it like, they're changing their personas. They just come up with new names for themselves. And that the visual aspect of it was more of just like how they were feeling in this new world. And that they see the world different now. Because
they've
altered their meaning of everything. But I don't know.
I love it when you can pull a couple of different, you know.
Sure.
Right.
And it's cool that they didn't go off and make the next two movies, I think. Because it probably would have gone back and filled in a lot of blanks if they were to be about this same situation.
Yeah.
And I'm happy those blanks aren't filled in.
You know, it's funny, too, when Grace was talking about obits, it reminded me of a quote in the movie, which I can't remember exactly, but it was kind of, it made me chuckle. He was, there was something saying something like, do you want to give this report or everybody's obits to elevator music? Do you guys remember that?
Oh yeah. What does he say? He says, do we really want to like accompany the apocalypse with elevator music, or do we want to soundtrack the end of the world with elevator music or something along those lines?
That was cool.
That was a cool line. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, thanks for introducing this movie, recommending it. It was actually enjoyable.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate it just in a different way now. I don't think I'm as hyped as I was on it the first time I saw it, only because I see it as more confusing for more people than I thought it would be before, where I was just like, oh, you got to watch this. Now I'm like, well, you got to watch this, but it's a little weird. But I still really, really enjoy it, and I'm going to see if I can seek out a $1.99 copy of it, like Grace right. has.
You got to find some closing Blockbusters. I think there's one left in Sandy that's going down.
I think they might be done, yeah. Which is a bummer, because I wanted to get over there and try to get some of it, but I was down and out with the illnesses. This beer,
shocker,
also fantastic.
Yeah, we accidentally drank 3 bottles already.
And absolutely the perfect
beer. Didn't we really?
For this film. Wow. I mean, the name, the font, the brewery itself, their tagline. I love it.
Yeah, they're awesome.
It's also perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just a pretty face on this one. Mm-mm. This one's got some kind of cool, you know, stuff that they're
doing like, behind the scenes. Because we dig quite a bit to find these beers. And, I mean, we bounce stuff off of each other and text back and forth and do all that. And it's rare that we find one that just has like so many things that we're like, oh, geez, it just keeps getting better.
Yeah. Well, that's why when people, and you've even said this, when people come up to you and say, hey, I've got this this movie, what would you pair with it?
Sure.
You're like, we don't do it that way, man.
Yeah, I'll get back to you in a week.
We put in our time.
Or keep listening because we might get to it.
Yeah.
Don't give me any ideas. We'll probably use them. Awesome. Well, until next time. So speaking of next time, I think we're gonna do something a little Englishy.
Are we? I wouldn't mind, but I'm open for anybody else's.
I think that's coming.
Vibe, yeah. You guys down for some English more action?
No, bring in some Old Peculiar.
God damn it!
Well, in lieu of,
you bring in the Old Peculiar, and I'll bring in the Smithwicks.
I will punch you.
I will throat punch you.
She has a virus impairment now from the pronunciation of Smithwicks.
Smithwicks. I was actually at a, and I might have told you guys this already, at an an Irish pub. It's over in Fremont. I forget the fucking name of it, but the guy there, the owner there, he's got pictures of himself all over the place. He was a soccer player, you know, all this stuff. And he's Irish. And I actually said, hey, is it Smithwicks? Is that acceptable? And he says, yeah, if you want to look like an idiot.
That's amazing.
I need to meet that man.
So awesome.
I knew you'd appreciate it.
Smithwicks.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
boy. For sure.
Super cool.
I can't even say it that way. It's hard to even say it that way.
Yeah, I thought he'd be like, oh, whatever, we don't care. But no, he was like, and I think he's like, even like, well, y'all, if you want to sound like a fucking idiot. You know,
sounds like.
I was like, "You're the owner. You're not supposed to speak to me that way."
Can I get some lap frog?
Some lap frog.
Oh my god!
What the fuck?
Well, we're gonna go on with our verbal virusing.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
We will catch you guys next time.
Peace.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, Matt, hoochie mama.
Ain't nothing but hoochie mama.